Joe Drape is an award-winning reporter for the New York Times and author of the New York Times bestseller Our Boys, A Perfect Season on the Plains with the Smith Center Redmen, The Race for the Triple Crown, and Black Maestro. His new book is Soldiers First, Duty, Honor, Country, and Football at West Point. The book is published by Times Books, and it's a great pleasure to welcome back Joe Drape. Joe, thank you very much for spending time with us. I appreciate it.
Joe, it's always a pleasure to visit with you.
What brought you to West Point and their football program?
You know, I'm going to have to give credit to my five-year-old son, for Jack, for bringing me out of the doldrums. You know, I'm a sports writer at the Times. I've covered colleges. I went to SMU, so I've seen up close what the best football team money could buy is. And, you know, I found myself doing one scandal after another, and it's gone on till this summer. I covered the Sandusky trial. But one night, Jack and I were home alone, and the Army-Notre Dame game came on from Yankee Stadium, and the pregame was on, and Jack instantly went crazy, the cadets marching in, the parachuters, and I started listening to Pete Dawkins, the Heisman Trophy winner, and he was talking about duty and honor and country and how it fit with football and how football fit with West Point, and basically their mission as military professionals. And out over my shoulders, but Jack goes, come on, Dad, let's go see the good guys. And, you know, that was kind of what I wanted to hear at that time. I wanted to go find a program, a story about what was good and what was right about college sports. And so that led me to the banks of the Hudson. I spent a year up there getting to know the players, the coaches, the teachers and instructors. You know, I had unfettered access. I could roam the grounds whenever. And, you know, I found one heck of a story up there.
And isn't part of the story, though, that they are unlike any other college team?
Absolutely. I mean, they are so far opposite of anybody else. First of all, they take 21 and 24 hours a semester of an Ivy League education, not 12 of 15 of basket weaving that happens at big-time universities all the time. They don't hang out in the weight room in the McDonald's all summer waiting for the next football season to come. They are at Fort Benning, Fort Riley, Germany, Italy. They're jumping out of planes. They're wandering through the woods. They're on missions and training exercises, learning their craft of being a professional soldier. You know, they're up every morning at 5:30 with the rest of their cadets, doing the marching, going to classes. They're held to the same standard as the other 4,000 cadets in there. You know, they can't miss class. They can't miss training. And where the starkest difference is on Saturday afternoons, they step on that field and they know they are not going to the NFL, and they don't even have dreams of going to the NFL. They know of May of their first year or senior season, they're going to get a diploma that means something, a commission as a lieutenant and a second lieutenant in the U.S. Army that means more, and they're going to get an envelope that's going to send them to Afghanistan or Iraq and put their boots on the ground and send them in to combat, and especially in the last 10 years, that's been the case. And they're going to be in the service for at least 5 years, if not more. So, you know, they have a playing football is the easiest thing they do in their day, their week, their month, their career at West Point. And so when they go play on Saturday afternoons, it's like they're kids, and they play with joy, and they play with, you know, fun and abandon.
You enter this equation and looking at this team and a season with this team, you come in and Rich Ellerson is the coach. He's looking to turn around this program that quite frankly wasn't doing very well.
No, they hadn't had a winning record in 14 years. They hadn't won a bowl game in 25 years until he got there. You know, they ran Bobby Ross off, and Bobby Ross ran himself off, I should say. Here's a Super Bowl coach who won a national college championship, and after a couple seasons, he said, you know, I can't do this. I can't win and have the program I want with these handcuffs I have of the military requirements and the academic requirements. So what Rich Ellerson did, his dad had gone there and was a career military officer. His two brothers had gone there and were career military officers. he, you know, used to listen in bases from Germany to Hawaii on the radio to these games. And he knew what the core values were, and he had a instinct, a hunch, a theory that if I embrace what this leadership laboratory is, this development of character, if I embrace that, I can be occasionally great and consistently good up there. So, you know, that's the leap he took. And, you know, the results have been pretty good so far, and this is a big year.
As the title suggests, with these young men being soldiers first, does that put more pressure on the coach, on Rich Ellerson?
Absolutely. I mean, he is handcuffed himself with things he can do. You know, he cut back practice to 3 days a week, and he doesn't hit anymore. This year, he's gone to 6:30 in the morning practices because his theory is that, you know, what the biggest bugaboo is rest and recovery, that these guys don't go to bed until late at night because they're on their studies. They don't eat a right breakfast. And, you know, they're just physically worn out by the time the season wears on. So, you know, he knows what he can and can't do. And the thing that where it takes a coach with a certain ego to do is he can look me in his eyes and look himself in the mirror and said, you know, I'm just their football coach. They have bigger and better things to do than listen to me and do what I tell them. And, you know, not everybody could do that. I mean, every other big-time university, Monday through Friday is all meant for the most important thing those athletes do is play 3 hours of football on Saturday. You know, they're taking classes around football. They're got tutors. They've got all the advantages. They got their own training tables. Everything's geared to Saturday. At West Point, Saturday's a day off.
One of the things that I found interesting in reading the book is you look through the eyes of several players, and one of them is the quarterback of the team, Trent Steelman, which, by the way, is one of the great quarterback names.
Yes, indeed.
Just a quarterback name. But that, essentially, what I get is that he is a microcosm of everything that you are talking about.
You know, Trent is a very human figure in this. I mean, he was a guy that has started basically every game he's been healthy since he's a freshman, has set records up there. And he came there by his own admission as a football player first. He didn't get into Vanderbilt to play football. He didn't get into Western Kentucky in his hometown. He wanted to play at the next level, and he thought he was good enough to play Division I. He was recruited by a previous regime. He got there, and he, by his own admission, didn't really know what to expect. And, you know, he was there to play football, not necessarily be a cadet. And that is something that has changed up there with Ellerson. When he comes to recruit you, he wants to tell you from 4 years from now, you're going to be an officer in harm's way. And if you could see yourself doing that, let's continue the conversation. If that's not the way you see yourself, then we're not going to waste each other's time. And, you know, Trent, it's been an evolution. It's been a struggle for him to come to terms with, you know, what he does and who he is and how he does it. And he's a senior, a firstie this year. And, you know, he says, it took me a long time to realize I was going to be an officer in the Army. And, you know, there was a lot of hard times to go with it. But now I have a purpose and a sense of who I am. And, you know, what's interesting, Joe, is you talk to the guys now, you talk to guys who've been out 5 years, you talk to generals who are still in the service, you talk to guys who've been out 20 years and in corporate. To a man and woman, they will tell you that West Point wasn't an experience they enjoyed and wouldn't characterize it as fun, but as the time went on, they learned to respect and appreciate it.
What's also interesting is how many, like the coach himself, of how many of the players come from a military background.
You know, and that's, you need to have some exposure. You need to understand what the sacrifices are made there. And not only does that help with families who are military families, that can indoctrinate them. I mean, it's America's best and brightest there. Larry Dixon is one of my characters. His mother was a chief petty officer. She ran a tight ship at home. And, I mean, you've got to be an A-plus student. You've got to test high. But you also have to be extraordinary beyond that. They put a slide up there the first day of reception when they bring it in there, and, you know, 600 Eagle Scouts, 800 captains of their sports teams, you know, 1,000 National Honors finalists. So they're looking for a well-rounded, and military families usually have that discipline. They usually know that to lead, you have to follow first. And they have the example of mom or dad who've gone to West Point, who have served, and they know what that means and what all that gives you. So, you know, they start aspiring to that when they're 6 and 7 years old. And this is not a lie or a joke or anything. If I'm a sixth grader and I write to West Point, they're open a file on me, and they will track me from six on through, because they truly are trying to get the best and the brightest.
When you look at the season, what is their goal? Is it to win? Is it to have a winning season? Because you see, a lot of this seems to be, well, Army Navy.
Well, and you know, and you can't get around that. The priorities are very simple: beat Navy, win the Commanders and Cup, Commanders and Chief Cup, and go to a bowl game. And you know, that's Navy Army's one of the oldest rivalries, and for my money, the best. And you know, President Kennedy probably said it best. He said, "The winners in the Army and Navy game is the American people." So that game, I mean, you go out to West Point now, on top of all their buildings, there's signs saying "Beat Navy." You can see it from the air. Both those teams can come into December 0-10 without having to score a touchdown. And if they beat the other one, that is like a national championship.
When you look at the program that Army has, how is it different from a Navy program?
You know, I think, with all respect to Navy and Air Force has dominated and Navy's gotten real good, I think they have an inherent advantage in recruiting. And what you find is they're all after, there's at least 20 kids a year that all three academies are trying to get. And the difference between going Army and Air, or Navy and Air Force are getting them, is, you know, Rich Ellerson has to go in there and say, you're going to be looking in the eyes of the enemy at some point. We are at the tip of the spear. We are boots on the ground. Air Force and Navy can say, well, we've got drones. You're going to be on a boat. You know, they could take the immediacy, and I've had kids who were recruited by all three of them tell the stories of the recruit, and have the coaches from the other academies tell their mother and father that, you know, it's not going to be as dangerous if he comes with us. And you know, that's ultimately, I guess that's the thing, the mortality of everything was driven home for me the first game of the season. Tyson and Tara Quink were members of the 2009 team. He was on the offensive line, fell in love with her. She was the first female manager of the football team, and that's like a high honor. MacArthur had it. Frank Borman had it. Brent Scowcroft had it. Mm. And they brought him down to Trophy Point, and Tara wheeled Tyson in, and Tyson was in a wheelchair, had lost both his legs. The reason they were in town is another classmate of theirs had died in combat, and they were there for the funeral. And, you know, this was a guy that just 2 years ago was their teammate. And he told the story about his patrol in Afghanistan a couple months later, how he'd stepped on an IED, how proud he was of his squad, that they basically jumped into position, were well-oiled, saved his life, you know, how close he was to those guys, how close he was to his fellow cadets and former cadets at West Point. And, you know, he said, this is what you're learning here, is to be able to handle situations like this, that, you know, we are a brotherhood, that we are a long gray line. And, you know, you look at a bunch of 18 to 22-year-olds who by nature think they're bulletproof, and there's a friend of theirs who obviously is not, shows that they aren't bulletproof. And, you know, that's what makes them different. Now, at Navy and Air Force, I don't know if it happens that dramatically. And, you know, at least there is a happy ending to the story. I mean, Tyson and Tara are back at West Point, coaching and teaching, and they just had a baby girl named Taylor. So, you know, that I think, is the difference. I think that's why Navy and Air Force get a little better player.
After spending a season with Army and trying to get away from the bad stories and look for something that's good, do you come away with what other programs could learn from this team, or is it an apples and oranges comparison?
You know, they could learn from this team, but what happens here, Joe, is chain of command. Everybody's got to be following the same orders. And in the military, that's happening. General Oterdink, General Rodriguez, they're all in line with just as the cadets are. They're all pulling the same way. They have a core value and belief in leadership and character and following orders and chain of command. What's broken in the regular system is you have presidents of universities on one hand saying, we can't pay players, and we're not going to, or boosters can't pay them. But at the same time, they're breaking their contracts with their conferences and chasing the money of TV contracts and realignment. And, you know, they're not setting the cues. They're not walking the walk, and they're talking the talk only. So, you know, that's what you could learn, is if somebody said, okay, we are going to do it this way, and if it means that I have to give up my television money to do it, then I'll do it. And, you know, then things change. But, you know, right now, it's all about the money. It's all about how many millions and billions it can bring in. And so there's little reason or impetus for the kids to act correctly.
How does the upcoming season look?
I think they're going to be very, very good. They got San Diego State to open. They've got 7 home games, including Air Force and Boston College. Last year, they led the league, or led the nation in rushing yardage, but the problem was they also led it in fumbles. And, you know, they're a veteran team. With anything, you need a little luck here. You need everybody to stay healthy, especially at a place like Army, because you aren't deep and you're not very big. And you get banged up on the field, but you also get banged up on your training drills and everything else, and you can't pull out of it. So I say this is the year they beat Navy, sing second, and go to a bowl game.
Excellent. Well, the name of the book is Soldiers First, Duty, Honor, Country, and Football at West Point. The book is published by Times Books. Joe Drape, a great pleasure to have you aboard. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Joe, thanks for your time, please.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Soldiers First, Duty, Honor, Country, and Football at West Point. The book is published by Times Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.